Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, October 29th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sudan prepares for a massive anti-military takeover protest this Saturday.
The Forces for Freedom and Change are mobilizing their supporters from across the country to come out on Saturday in a mass protest against the act that was done by Al Burhan.
Meanwhile, Sudan's U.S. ambassador rejects his dismissal by what he calls an illegal body. Eswatini's prime minister is criticized for his stance on the role of regional envoys. UN Special Rapporteur concludes Zimbabwe's sanctions mission, and Uganda's president vows to defeat domestic terrorism.
I would therefore like to assure the public that neither rural-based insurgency nor urban terrorism will defy our capacity. The only issue to deal with is the matter of bail. We, the freedom fighters, have never supported the issue of bail for murderers.
And Nigerians are skeptical about digital currency days after its launch. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. President Joseph Biden has joined the chorus of world leaders condemning the military takeover in Sudan. In a statement on Thursday, President Biden called on the military authorities to allow the Sudanese people to protest peacefully and restore the civilian-led transitional government. Mr. Biden also called for the release of all those detained and the restoration of the institutions associated with the transitional government in line with the 2019 Constitutional Declaration and the 2020 Juba Peace Agreement. UN Security Council members have also called for the immediate release of all those detained by the military authorities. Meanwhile, journalist Michael Aitit in the Sudanese capital Khartoum says international and domestic flights at the Khartoum International Airport resumed on Thursday, but he says movement in the capital is limited due to heavy security deployment ahead of Saturday's planned protest.
The Forces for Freedom and Change, these political forces, are mobilizing their supporters from across the country, plus the resistance committee who are actually representing them within the residential areas, to come out on Saturday in a mass protest against the act that was done by Al Burhan.
So, Michael, in terms of the protest on Saturday, what sort of preparation are you seeing for the military?
Last evening, we have witnessed a lot of military pickups full of security, talk of Sudan Armed Forces and Rapid Support Forces with their full ammunition arriving into Khartoum town. Some were arriving from the southern part through Jebel Awliya, some came through Omdurman, some also came through eastern Sudan. There are also more checkpoints that have been established along the way as you advance towards downtown. And the downtown has even become very restricted of movement because there are no much happening within the downtown because the ministries are closed and all the government installations are shut down since the declaration of the state of emergency.
When we spoke on Thursday morning, you indicated that perhaps the airport in Khartoum was probably going to be reopened. Mm. Has that happened?
Yes. Yesterday morning, flights have resumed from and into Khartoum Airport. I spoke with one of the passengers who was actually delayed flight going to Qatar. He was actually telling me the airport is full of passengers, those who are coming, those who are planning to go into different directions. So, yes, I can confirm the Khartoum International Airport has been reopened and the flights are coming in and going out, but it is not in its regular capacity of the numbers of flights.
So you said that the military leader has taken some actions regarding Sudanese ambassadors. What can you tell us?
Yeah, Al Burhan actually issued an order relieving six Sudanese ambassadors, the one of the United States, the one in France, the one to European Union, and the one in Geneva, and the other one in China, and the other one Qatar in Gulf countries here. So he has relieved six ambassadors. And some of the reason attributed to this relief is because some of these ambassadors actually came out clearly condemning the act that was taken by Al-Burhan, and they consider this to be a military takeover and all. So they actually condemn it as they take side with the FFC, which is the political forces. So, and the decree says they should be relieved immediately. There are no replacements being met yet, but maybe within the coming days we might see if some of them are going to be replaced with new ones.
Michael, thank you so much. It's always very nice to talk with you.
You're welcome.
That was journalist Michael Atit in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. As you just heard in the previous report, Sudan's military leader, Lieutenant General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, has fired at least six ambassadors from their posts after they spoke out against this week's military takeover. Those dismissed include the ambassador to the United States, Noureddin Sati, who tells reporter Nabil Biagio that he does not accept his firing by what he calls an illegal body. Ambassador Sati also said he is in discussion with the U.S. State Department to decide his next move.
We have not received notification yet, actually. But we got the news from TV, the official TV on Sudan, that this has happened. But we are still waiting for official notification.
Do you know why you were fired?
I know, because of the position that I have taken.
So it's because of the statement you released on Tuesday denouncing the military takeover and vowing to resist it, and your interview with Voice of America on that?
Yes, many interviews.
I asked you on Tuesday if General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan fired you, what would you do? And you said you would cross that bridge when you arrived at it. I think we're here now. What are you going to do?
I do not accept instructions from an illegal body. I'm staying on, my friend.
So you're going to defy the order to step down and resist. How are you going to proceed with that?
Well, I'm in the process of doing that, actually. I'm in consultation with the State Department.
Who else was fired among Sudanese diplomats, and have you been talking to them?
Well, my information is that six have been fired. Our ambassador in Brussels, our ambassador in Paris, our ambassador in Geneva, our ambassador in Doha, and our ambassador in Beijing, and myself.
Have you been in touch with them?
A couple of them, and we have agreed to stay on.
You mentioned you were in touch with the State Department. Can you elaborate on that? What are you telling officials there, and what are they telling you?
I cannot, because I have not met with them yet. When I meet with them, then I'll be in a position to make a statement.
That was Sudan's ambassador to the United States, Noureddin Sati, speaking with Nabil Biagio from Washington, D.C., Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni has vowed to defeat domestic terrorism and overall crime in the country following recent bomb blasts, which left three people dead and several others injured. As Mogumi Davis Rakaringi reports from Kampala, President Museveni also reiterated his determination to remove bail application for capital offense suspects.
In a televised address to the nation Thursday evening, President Museveni blamed the recent wave of violence in Uganda on enemies of the country, whom he called parasites. The president's address came after two bombs were separately detonated in Kampala last week, one in an eating place and another on a passenger bus. The police have termed the former as an act of domestic terror and the latter a suicide attack. President Museveni said the situation is now under control as the government has the ability to track the perpetrators.
Why Ugandans should not be intimidated by criminals? There is no way somebody can commit a crime and not leave clues behind. It is impossible. They always leave clues. If the police is serious, they will not fail to get clues.
President Museveni said a raft of measures he introduced in 2018 to curb crime, including installation of CCTV cameras in Kampala and major towns, capturing of palm and DNA prints for all Ugandans, locating identity of all social media users, and gun fingerprinting have helped the police to promptly deal with crime. Mathias Mpuuga, leader of the opposition in parliament, said this week that the president should come out with a scorecard on how those measures have helped to reduce crime.
We want to demand of him to come and offer a report card, a scorecard, as to how those measures he so proposed have so far moved, because the funds were voted for those measures, because those measures were followed with a request in the budget to fund for that security.
President Museveni is also vehemently opposed granting of bail to suspects.
I would therefore like to assure the public that neither rural-based insurgency nor urban terrorism will defy our capacity. The only issue to deal with is the matter of bail. We, the freedom fighters, have never supported the issue of bail for murderers, rapists, and firers of the underage. The present debate is good because it shows who is who, and we are not going to relent until this shameful betrayal by the elements of the neo-colonial elite of the masses is defeated.
Also in his speech Thursday evening, President Museveni asked Ugandans to be vaccinated against COVID-19 so that he can open the economy by early next year. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, October 29th. A UN special rapporteur has called on the U.S. and other Western governments to lift sanctions that they imposed on Zimbabwe in 2003 for alleged election rigging and human rights abuses. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Special Rapporteur Alena Dohan says the sanctions are exacerbating corruption in Zimbabwe as banks, companies and individuals banned from trading abroad simply bribe others to conduct their business for them.
I call all countries which impose sanctions, as well as banks and companies of third states, as well as countries where these banks and companies are registered, to behave in accordance with the rule of law. Due diligence principle, lift sanctions, make legislation being corresponding the international law and principles of human rights protection.
The European Union imposed travel and financial sanctions on allies of then Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe in 2002 in response to election rigging and human rights abuses by his party and government. The U.S. followed suit with sanctions in 2003. President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government says the sanctions must be lifted, arguing they hurt the country's efforts to climb out of a long economic slump. Earlier this week, in separate statements, the United States, Britain and the European Union said Zimbabwe's economy was suffering not because of sanctions, but because of corruption and government mismanagement of the country's resources. Pride Mukono, an opposition activist, comments on Dohan's preliminary findings of sanctions on Zimbabwe.
Harina zvarabudisa zvizhinji zvinonyanya kushamisira zvatingati zvine musoro ataura akenya yanga isina kana maturo.
There isn't much which makes sense in her findings which we can talk about. It was all nonsense, says Mukono. He adds, I am happy that she encouraged dialogue between the ZANU-PF government and important stakeholders such as the opposition, churches and civic society so that they discuss issues of electoral and political reforms as well as corruption. Mukono said the opposition does not expect the sanctions will be lifted as Zimbabwe's human rights issues have yet to be addressed. Dohan, who has been in Zimbabwe for 2 weeks to assess the impact of the sanctions, will present her full report to the UN Human Rights Council in September next year. On Thursday, the Belarusian national refused to comment if Zimbabwe had addressed the issues of human rights and election rigging, which inspired sanctions nearly 20 years ago. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
In Eswatini, the newly appointed prime minister is coming under criticism over the government's stance on the role of regional envoys who were recently in the country. The envoys who met King Mswati III, government officials and other stakeholders came to find ways of ending the political unrest in the Southern African kingdom. Local media quoted Prime Minister Cleopas Dlamini as saying that critics appear to have misconceptions about the role envoys from the Southern African Development Community, SADC, will play in the pro-democracy activist demands for dialogue. Vusi Shangwe is the leading member of the political party assembly, the PPA, and the exiled leader of the opposition Swaziland People's Liberation Movement. He tells viewers Peter Clotty that the prime minister's statement is the reason that the international community should pressure the government to allow genuine dialogue that will lead to true democracy.
We can just say that the empire is indeed naked, in the sense that everybody can see that there's no other way out of this upheaval than to negotiate, and to negotiate in a proper negotiation, not what they have said is going to take place in his cackle crawl. So the reason why we are not surprised by this is it is actually a validation of what we've been saying over the years, to say that the Tinkunda system of government is not only arrogant, but it's a system of government that thinks that the world revolves around them. When it comes to proper negotiation and when it comes to proper dialogue to find lasting solutions to the current political impasse and returning the country to multi-party democracy.
But Vusi, isn't the prime minister right that the SADC Troika, their main objective or their main job is to mediate and not necessarily to lead a political dialogue? Isn't he right by saying so?
Actually, this prime minister, for starters, himself is an illegitimate prime minister because he was elected in a system that fails the basic denominators of what democracy is. So the hence I'm saying, in a normal situation, we would say that he is right. We all know that these regional bodies, their main activity and their main objectives is to offer support, is to offer advisory counsel and things like that to member states. However, on the issue of Swaziland is an abnormal situation. And everybody knows that the Swazi question, it needs just to have the country rebooted, particularly on the political system of the country.
Babusi, the demand by civil society groups and opposition groups like yours, the SPLM, that the dialogue should be organized and mediated by an internationally sanctioned body such as the UN or SADC, some are saying it's a no-go area because this is an internal issue. How do you respond to that?
The king cannot be the drum beater and also dance to his tune at the same time. For that reason, that's why we're saying we want an international mediator. We also want, before everything starts, we want the whole ground to be level in terms of now we cannot go into a negotiation with all the prevailing situations around the political setup in the country. We've got people that are in exile. We've got the members of parliament that are languishing in prison on some fabricated charges. Hence, we're saying let the ground be leveled in the first place before we can engage on talks. Secondly, it cannot be said that it is an internal matter, because people are dying. So that is why we are saying we need an internationally recognized mediator to come and facilitate the negotiation process, I mean the dialogue that we are so much calling for.
Vusi Shangwe is the leading member of the political party assembly and the exiled leader of the opposition Swaziland People's Liberation Movement. He was speaking with VOA's Peter Clotty. Thousands of Nigerians are expressing concern about the country's new digital currency after its user app was temporarily removed from the Google Play Store this week. The app has recorded tens of thousands of downloads since its launch on Monday. In this report, Timothy Obiezu speaks to early users and digital technology experts from Abuja.
Central bank authorities say a system glitch that led to the temporary removal of the eNaira Speed wallet was caused by the huge amount of traffic on the download site. They say the problem has been resolved. The eNaira app has recorded over 100,000 downloads on the Google Play Store alone since launching on Monday. But thousands of early users say they encountered many difficulties. Ogunbi Olubi runs a Lagos-based digital company.
It's a great initiative by the central bank. They are positioning for the future, which means they are heading somewhere with this. But the execution could have been better.
Nigerian authorities restricted cryptocurrency transactions in the country early this year and promised to create a safer option for citizens, the eNaira. The government expects to leverage the blockchain technology to improve financial inclusion ease cross-border trades, increase remittances, and boost the economy. But users like Abuja stock trader Leonard Nwankwo worry about hacking. Nwankwo says the central bank's terms offer no insurance in the event of losses of revenues or profits.
Whether it's an error that is caused by them or an error that is not caused by them. So that's to tell you that only the consumers of those products or the investors in this product or in this currency are actually bearing 100% risk. So tomorrow an agent can decide to do something dubious with you and he's free to go because by the limitations of liability, he is not to be held accountable.
Ogumbi Yolubi says more awareness is needed to boost user confidence on the eNaira platform.
I don't think that people downloaded and tried the app before they began to report it. You see, that is due to mistrust. I think the CBN needs to go on a campaign, you know, introducing and educating people about the eNaira and how it's going to be solving problems in their lives.
Central banks around the world are adopting digital versions of their legal tenders. The Nigerian government hopes that the eNaira will boost Nigeria's gross domestic products by $29 billion in the next 10 years. But experts say that goal can only be achieved if end users have confidence in authorities and the currency itself. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is something O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, something.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports in the Netherlands, where Cameroon goalkeeper Andre Onana returned to first team training on Thursday with his club Ajax, despite having seemingly played his last game for the Dutch Giants. And the indomitable Lions have taken advantage of this to invite him for their last two games against the Flames and the blockbuster clash versus the Elephants of Cote d'Ivoire. The Ajax goalkeeper was initially handed a 12-month suspension for failing an out-of-competition doping test, with his Dutch club claiming their number one accidentally took medicine prescribed for his wife. Ajax supported him in appealing the ban, and Onana's suspension was subsequently reduced to 9 months. And now to Ghana, where the Ghana Football Association has backed the government's decision to allow only people who have been fully vaccinated entry into the various stadia when the Ghana football season campaign gets underway. Speaking at the 27th Ordinary Congress at the Ghanaian Soccer Center of Excellence in Pram Pram, the Ghana Football Association President Kurt Okraku said to ensure that more fans will be accessing games, the Football Association will continue to ensure fans are vaccinated to be able to access football. Rwandan coach Thierry Hitimana has been appointed as coach for Tanzanian giant Simba SC for the rest of the season. Hitimana replaces French tactician Didier Gomez Darouza, who resigned on Tuesday following his club's abysmal CAF Champions League campaign, which saw them being knocked out by Botswana Minos Jaweng Galaxy over the weekend. His first assignment will be on Wednesday when Simba SC host Tanzania Polisi in a league game at the Benjamin Mkapa Stadium. In basketball news, FIBA Africa on Wednesday confirmed Angola as a host country for the first window of the FIBA Basketball World Cup 2023 African qualifiers. The three-day tournament will take place in the Angolan city of Benguela from November the 26th to the 28th, with 8 teams from Group A and C vying for 6 places in the decisive second round of the African qualifiers. Angola hosted 2 qualifying windows of the World Cup 2019 African qualifiers in the capital Luanda in November 2017 and December 2018. And finally, in cricket news, the Cricket South Africa board said that its instruction for the national team of South Africa, the Proteas, to take a knee at the T20 World Cup was only aimed at achieving a unified approach against racism by the team. However, wicketkeeper Quinton de Kock chose not to do so, withdrawing from the game against the West Indies. After coming under severe criticism, Quinton de Kock apologized to his teammates and fans for the hurt. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, October 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington.